It's time to get all set for Sunday, a podcast for busy and distracted Catholics with your hosts, Scott Williams and Jeff Traylor.
When I hear the coffee brewing, I think, what the heck we doing? Because I got barely any sleep last night. As the diaper bag I pack with Hot Wheels dollies and some snacks, I say a prayer there'll be a seat in the crime room this time. It's alright, cause I'm all set for Sunday. It's alright, cause I'm all set for. It's alright, cause I'm all set for. It's alright, cause I'm all set for Sunday.
Welcome to All Set for Sunday, a podcast for busy and distracted Catholics to be a little more prepared for Sunday Mass. My name's Scott Williams. My co-host is Jeff Traylor. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Scott.
Ready for vacation?
Yes, I am. Getting ready to head on vacation.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Where are you headed to?
South Florida.
Lovely. Miami?
Not all the way to Miami. Mm. Fort Myers area.
Key West?
Yeah.
Cool. Father Tim Wichiscala, how are you?
Good to be back. Good. Glad to hear you're going somewhere for spring break. Jeff, Scott, are you going anywhere for spring break?
I'm not. We went to Great Wolf Lodge a couple of weeks ago for just like a quick weekend trip.
Did you see the wolves?
Oh!
Do they have an actual, do they keep a wolf in a cage there?
They've got like people in costumes, which is like the cage of emotion. But
yeah, other than that, that's fair.
Yeah. And both of you guys are feeling great today, huh?
Yeah. Little that's under the right. weather. My apologies for scratchy voice or coughing, everyone.
Yeah, I would have been in there as well, but I didn't want to give you what I think is the flu. So
yeah,
I'm here at home.
We appreciate that. I feel great. So
good. Well, I'm sure Jeff will cough on you and ruin that.
Yeah.
You said that little birdie Enza. Is that what you were talking about, Father?
Influenza.
All right. Cool. Well, this might be a shorter episode than most, which that's fine, but
ironic too, considering how long the gospel is.
Yeah.
Yep. But we're compensating for how long Mass is going to be for you guys.
We're trying to make up for it for everyone.
Is Jeff going to read the entire Passion from Mark?
No, we're all going to take a part. We'll give you some parts. We'll give you one that you don't normally have. So it'll be fun. We'll mix it up for you.
Cool.
Did you not look?
No, I knew it was the Passion.
You know how Palm Sunday goes?
I just didn't know I was going to have a part.
No, we're not. We're going to skip it. All right. I think people have heard it. At this point, if you haven't, pay attention when you're at Mass this week for the first time.
We'll link it in the show notes.
Yeah, it'll be. We'll link the show notes. No, it's Palm Sunday, the beginning of the gauntlet for our priests and pastors here. They got quite the run happening over the next 7-8 days coming from Palm Sunday. But Palm Sunday, we get an antiphon, right? Like we get Palm Sunday really lays it out. So we get a gospel antiphon in Matthew. Jesus is cursing a fig tree for not bearing fruit, and it symbolizes the consequences of spiritual barrenness and hypocrisy that we encounter. So that's Matthew 21:9. And then we get a gospel then at the opening procession. So Father, that's traditionally read by a deacon if they're there?
If they're there, yeah.
Yeah.
Just like a normal gospel, yeah, if there's a deacon.
So you have two choices. Do you know which one you're doing yet?
We are doing John's. John's one of the choices.
Got it. So in John's.
Just so I can make my deacon swear.
John 12:12-16 says.
Talk about asses.
John narrates. He narrates the jubilant scene of Jesus' entry into Jerusalem with the crowds waving palm branches, proclaiming him King of Israel. Does it talk? Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Jesus found an ass. What?
It says ass's colt there.
Yeah. Seated upon an ass's colt. There you go. So a lot of ass in the Gospel of John this week, but and then we go to the responsorial psalm. Our responsorial psalm, my God, why have you abandoned me? Maybe the banger of all bangers.
What about the first reading?
Oh, did we skip the first reading already? Yeah. Good Lord.
That's all right.
Sorry. It's confusing this week. Our first reading comes from Isaiah 54, chapter 50, verses 4-7. So Isaiah portrays a suffering servant who remains obedient, steadfast, despite facing adversity and opposition. And he embodies Jesus' sacrificial mission. So he's showing us this embodiment of what that mission will be. Then we get, my God, why have you abandoned me? This, okay, so I have very specific memories growing up.
Banger memories?
Yes, of the Passion, like, at when I was growing up at St. Luke, there was this wonderful parishioner who was a musician. I won't say his name because I think he's still a musician, but he would get in there and like the way he sang this psalm is like what always makes me think of like it. It's the image I get when you talk about like somebody singing the psalm and just really going at it.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it was like full body emotion. Like he was moving around and just like really getting deep and like whispery even in there. Like,
oh, yeah,
it was very, very exciting stuff. I'm sure any former St. Luke parishioners out there would know exactly what I'm talking about, but pretty exciting.
Did they also sing, Were You There? Did he also get really into that?
Yes. Yes, he did. He would also play Thunder and Lightning on his keyboard during the Passion. It was, very, it was like a fire at the circus. Intense. Our second reading then, our second reading comes from Philippians.
Father Tim didn't get your joke.
He might have. I think he got it. Did not listen to me. I said it was like a fire at the circus. It's intense.
A fire at the circus.
Intense.
Oh.
You were a little slow on the uptake today.
There it goes.
So, and it's always a good joke when you have to repeat it four times. Philippians chapter 2, 6 to 11 is our second reading. Paul describes Christ's humanity and exaltation, willing to empty himself, become obedient to death on the cross, leading to the ultimate glorification of our Lord. And then we have our gospel. So our gospel reading is Mark's Passion. We're not going to read the whole thing. So that would be, what a miserable podcast to have to listen to us all sick, just stumble over this and struggle through it. But if you haven't heard it, I'm sure it's out there somewhere. Go listen to it or read it on your own. But it's Mark chapter 14, 1 through 15 and 47. So there, we did it.
Great. Right. Did Jeff get anything wrong, Father?
No, he did a good job. As he said, there are two options for the gospel at the beginning, John's and I think Matthew's, which tells the story of the triumphant entry into Jerusalem with palms. Have either of you ever seen Jesus Christ Superstar? I always think of the...
I don't think I have.
When he comes in, like, hey, Zana, Hosanna, Zion, and they wave the palms. I think of that every time. But anyways, that's, of course, at most churches, you either do that in the narthex or like here at St. Mark, if it's nice outside, we'll do it out front. And then everybody processes in, which is, of course, what's cool about it is the contrast of the triumphant entry into Jerusalem and then their passion narrative when right after that, from being their king to being a criminal that they want to crucify. Mark's Passion, just like Mark's gospel, is the shortest of all of them, shortest of the four. Mark has a way of just sort of going from point to point, being pretty concise. So some of the details that you're used to hearing, you might notice you won't hear this time. It's just kind of the straight narrative. But it is year B, so we do Mark's, and there's always plenty there with the Passion. I kind of like the thing with Palm Sunday or Passion Sunday, as it's technically called. The thing with it is the gospel is, it's not only so long, but it's such a powerful moment that you really don't want to preach a big, long homily. So typically I keep the homily very short and I like to end it with silence. Let's sit in silence for a bit and stand in awe of what Christ did for us. To be able to lay down our, not only our sins, but our anxieties and troubles at the cross, to be able to just take a moment to thank him for, for his sacrifice, for defeating death. I mean, there's not too much that you could say in a homily that, that is more, that would be able to capture everything that's going on. So, and everybody is touched. Yeah, everybody's touched by a different part of the Passion anyways. So just to kind of, remind people of how important what we just read is and how you know, how central to our faith it is and what it means, and then just sit for a moment in silence.
I think it would be a misfire to preach this week and be like, here's a story from my life that connects to these readings.
Or like an anecdotal story or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. As you get up there and you're like, but I got the flu last week. So this
I understand this.
Yeah.
It is. Yeah. You know, there's actually even an option for Palm Sunday and Good Friday in the lectionary that you can skip the first reading in the Psalm and the second reading. You can go straight into the Passion just to show how important it is. And we don't do that, but I think, you know, just to show that this is, it's, of course, we do this twice a year on Palm Sunday, Passion Sunday, and then Good Friday. And Palm Sunday is Matthew, Mark, and Luke that rotate. Good Friday is always John. So hopefully your listeners will get to hear, you know, hear both Mark's and John's. I really think if there are any, if there is any time of the year where you really just go all in with the faith, it's Holy Week. If you're able to come Thursday evening for Holy Thursday, Friday, usually around 3 for Good Friday and the Easter Vigil, I can't recommend it enough. It's like the Super Bowl of our faith.
Is there a time when you were growing up where like the Holy Week kind of took on a new meaning or really hit you in a different way? Or has it always been a really important thing in your life?
So I went to Catholic grade school and Catholic high school. So we always did a lot during Holy Week. Is like, it wasn't like a big academic week. You know, we had like living stations at St. Barnabas and things like that. You know what I think was one of the coolest things for me was the first time that I actually, and I can't, it had to have been in college. The first time that I actually went to the service of the cross on Good Friday. Because in grade school and high school, we had a Good Friday something like it was either living stations or at Roncalli, it'd be like some sort of passion play or passion narrative or something like that. But it was never the actual service that happens on Good Friday, the full liturgical service with the priest and everything where you go touch the cross, or adore the cross. So the Adoration of the Cross service, the first time I saw that, and like in context with Holy Thursday the night before in the Easter Vigil, to see it all as like one big sort of mass, like one big celebration, it was really cool. And I, not to say there's anything wrong with living stations or things like that, but to be able to actually see that 3 p.m service, it's one of the most, you know, along with Palm Sunday, it's one of the most powerful liturgical events that we have each year.
I think Good Friday services become one of those areas in the church that like most people, wherever they've grown up, the service will like go to the mats for their service being the greatest experience you could ever have on a Good Friday. But I would agree with you. Like the more I started experiencing different options and different things, the more you realize like how robust that can be. But everyone is just so hardcore about like, oh, like when I was working at Roncalli, we would fight it that all these kids wanted to leave and go back to their parish to see their good, because their Good Friday service was just, but it was the passion play, right? It was eighth graders doing the passion play, which is beautiful and wonderful and like great that they do. But like you said, Father, like that, the true liturgical service of the cross, like kind of gets overlooked in that world.
Now, you know, nowadays the schools, the Catholic schools at least get out at 1, so they can all come to the 3 p.m. service. So still.
I think I've shared with you before, Jeff, I think there's something really beautiful about Holy Thursday. And when I was, Father Rick at St. John started doing like this pilgrimage of the Altar of Repose. And it's like, I think it's like a historical tradition in Rome to go to different churches. And I think it might have a fancier name than what I just said, but do you know anything?
So the altar is
to sit for you to say that you lived in Rome, but
there you go. I used to live in Rome.
Do you have any point of reference? Yeah.
There's kind of two things you're talking about. In Rome, during Lent, they have what's called the station churches, where every church has a tradition. Each of the 40 days, there's a mass said at one of these historic, you know, very, very beautiful churches. And then the Altar of Repose on Holy Thursday. So just as a reminder for anyone that's never seen it, at the end of Holy Thursday Mass, you take the Eucharist and in the ciborium and remove it from the tabernacle and then process it to a different place, you know. So some churches put it in, like for us, we go out of the church and into our gym and have it set up in there. Other churches might have a chapel or something they take it to. Then there's the night watch, some time to sit with Christ, you know, sort of like the like he asked the disciples to do when he was in the Garden of Gethsemane. And then the Eucharist is put away. So, and because of that, on Good Friday, it, as you walk into the church, there's no sanctuary lamp. There's no, the tabernacle's empty, the altar is bare. But those altars of repose, you can go from church to church and see how they have them set up.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the most powerful things for me. And when I kind of got more and more into the Holy Week thing is I went into the nave of the church I was at, and just to see the tabernacle doors open, the church empty, the sanctuary candle not lit, and just this feeling of emptiness, like, and I don't know, that just really hit home for me.
Good Friday is the only day of the year where Mass is not said. The Good Friday service has no Eucharistic prayer.
Right.
Is this also when, like, there are churches that will, like, I've even been able to be a part of churches that, like, remove statues. They remove icons at this time.
Typically, yeah, they might remove icons, but you cover statues. Like, we'll be covering our statues. That starts at Passiontide, which is actually the fifth Sunday, which is this coming Sunday.
Yeah.
So if you come to St. Mark, the statues all have purple veils on them, except for the main crucifix, because we can't reach it. It's too high up. But yeah.
Could you reach it if you stood on top of the altar?
I don't think so. It's
an ending question from my daughter that the eighth graders or the children at St. Mark talk about apparently often.
Yeah.
Could Father reach it?
Is Father tall enough to touch the cross if he stood on the altar?
Yeah.
Maybe. Yeah, or creative enough to figure out a way to get a purple cloth up there.
Yeah.
You can do it, Father.
But you could.
I'm sure I could.
All right. Anything else? Dumb questions?
Yeah.
Okay.
I've got dumb questions for sure.
I got one.
Go for it.
You go first.
This is not more dumb question as much as like dumb discussion, but one of those little things that happens on Palm Sunday that I just like, I really look forward to because of watching the chaos that ensues from it. When at least like at a parish where everyone comes in, sits down, and then you go outside, right? And you got and you light the fire for Palm Sunday, and everybody's out there, and you do the blessing.
So the fire is the Easter Vigil, but you also go out for Palm Sunday to hold the palms.
For both, you go out, you do the blessing, and then you go back in. There's nothing more entertaining at that point than like everyone's seat gets taken, and like there's no good way to like reserve a seat, and then all of a sudden you have people who were there 30 minutes early. And they come in and somebody's in their seats and nobody wants to say anything. And they're just standing in the aisle, kind of spinning in circles. And I don't know. I mean, you have to see that happening too, right?
Saw it. And people told me about it. And I was like, this is not that hard. Put a book in your seat. And if it gets taken, go up to the person and say, you're in my seat, move. That's not that. I mean, people told me that. And I was like, just ask them to move. And they were like, we can't do that. And I was like, well, they can't. I mean, it's not that. I don't know if they did on purpose, but if there's a book there, then you're perfectly within your rights to say, sorry, we were sitting here. Please move.
No, it's the same idea as like people who have the same seat they sit in every week at Mass. And then if you sit there.
Well, that's different.
They come in and they're like, what's happening?
Because
like,
at that point, you didn't take their seat because it's not. But at this point, yes, they literally accidentally took seats. It happens here all the time as well.
You should sit in Father's seat.
It's my seat never gets taken. I never have to worry about it.
Except by Father John.
Well, you keep your book there.
That's right.
You keep your book there.
So Jeff mentioned that this coming week is like a gauntlet for priests. Would you say that your gauntlet is more to the tone of Ninja Warrior or more towards Total Wipeout? How do you approach this?
I'm not entirely sure what that means. I'm going to say Ninja Total Wipeout, because I'm usually wiped out by the end of it, but it's a fun week. Palm Sunday, Chrism Mass, Holy Thursday, Good Friday, Holy Saturday, Easter Sunday. After the 10:30 a.m. on Easter Sunday, I'm usually ready to go to my parents and take a nap and then have a big Easter dinner.
Nice. You've never seen Total Wipeout?
Is that like where they oh, that's right. Is that like where they run and get bumped off by?
Yeah.
And then and Ninja Warrior is like where they like can climb and I would die on both those shows, but it's more like Total Wipeout.
Yeah. You're more like die to yourself.
Yeah. Yeah,
exactly. I would, yeah.
You can use that in your homily if you want.
This year, even specifically, we come like it's not always massive, but in some places it is. But you've got St. Patrick's Day, Solemnity of St. Joseph, right into Palm Sunday. into Easter week and the Triduum and the Vigil. Like, it, yeah, it's got to wipe you out.
There's a lot going on. Yeah.
Okay, the other thing I have here is, so you have deacons, so that affects this a little bit. But this is, I always feel like Palm Sunday gospel reading is also the opportunity for you to, like, pick who your best readers are and ask them to come up. Because, like, when doing the passion narration, you need, like, really good people up there. And I feel like it's, whether reality or not, it's a good way to perceive, like, who does Father like the best?
Well, I would say, reader. In a parish where Father micromanaged enough to pick the readers each week, that would be the case. But we have a whole, like, scheduling software / volunteer that does all that. So I don't know who's doing the readings till I show up. Sure, now, of course, if you have a deacon, there's always the narrator, and the priest is always Jesus at the passions.
Yeah. Yeah, and you get the easy one.
I know. So the narrator does most of the heavy lifting, but yeah. Except for when the priest has to say, Eloi, Eloi, sabachthani. Sometimes you get tongue-tied on that.
But at least you've been practicing it, it sounds like.
It's a day at seminary for that.
Okay, this is a question I've had written down for the last, like, 3 weeks, and we haven't gotten to it. So I'm excited to ask. What do you ever find yourself, like, in the world of, like, celebrating the Mass? Are you partial to, like, certain chalices or patens or, like, the tools that you use to celebrate? Like, are you partial to certain things? Like, you like to use certain stuff at a certain time, or you really just like the feel of this or whatever it is?
I mean, it's nice when you have your own chalice that people, like, well, I got a chalice from our archives that my siblings had refurbished for me at my ordination as a gift. So it's like, you know, it's not technically mine. I'm going to give it back when I die to the archives, but it's nice to use that. I like chalices that have a little bit of weight to them, because, you know, like, if they're super light, then it, you know, then it feels like they'll tip over easily or something. But and, you know, priests have their preferences on.
But I like that your implication was also that if they're super light, you don't realize it, and then you end up just throwing them in the air.
Really. So I'm so strong that I always forget how strong I am, and then they go flying up in the air. As far as vestments, my preference on vestments is not heavy, because I get hot easily. And as Jeff could attest to, I'm often very sweaty at Mass because you have three layers on. So I like vestments that are nice and thin and breathe.
That's why the parish installed an AC vent just for Father.
Yeah, exactly. In a fan, especially during the summer. But as far, you know, and I'm kind of OCD, so I like things to match. So, like, if the main chalice is gold colored, then this, in my opinion, the side chalices and even the bowls should be gold colored instead of, like, silver. And that's just a me thing, though. But yeah.
But I feel like you're always using ceramic stuff.
We don't have any ceramic. We do not. I have a trivia question for you guys. Ready?
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. So Holy Week, most of the days have names, you know, Passion Sunday or Palm Sunday, Holy Thursday, Good Friday, Holy Saturday, Easter Sunday. Yep. What is the Wednesday of Holy Week called? It has a name.
This is isn't it the Maundy Wednesday? Maundy? Am I getting that wrong?
That's not what I'm thinking, no.
Holy Wednesday.
It is called Spy Wednesday.
Oh, yeah. I think I'm right, though. I need to look this up.
So
I used a different verb for it.
I was going to say Holy Hump Day as my second guess.
Maybe that word means spy or something, Jeff, but it's because, and the reason being is because the gospel reading on the Wednesday of Holy Week is always when Judas is, like, mm-hmm. looking for or spying for an opportunity to betray Christ. So it's like when he decides to do
I was wrong. It's Maundy Thursday.
Oh, for Holy Thursday? Yeah.
Yeah.
So there you go. There's your trivia for the week. Spy Wednesday.
Great.
A sad gospel about Judas's decision to betray and spy on Christ.
What a snitch.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's all the time we got today.
All right.
Thank you for getting through this under the weather.
I'm going to go lay in bed now and take some ibuprofen and hopefully get some rest.
Yeah. I'm going to go work all day and then drive to Chattanooga tonight.
I'm just going to have an awesome day. So,
all right.
Enjoy it. Enjoy
See you guys.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
It's all right, cause I'm all set for. It's all right, cause I'm all set for. It's all right, cause I'm all set for Sunday.